Well, here we are.
Where are we?
So welcome, we should say first. Welcome to the Super Fun, Awesome, Happy Time Pedal Show podcast.
Episode one.
And stuff.
Maiden voyage.
I'm Gabor.
Hey, I'm Alex. And today, or this evening,
yes,
we're with Sparky.
Hello. How are you, boys?
Good, how are you?
I'm great. But all better for seeing you guys, that's for sure.
Oh,
welcome to Mulaney.
Yeah.
You had us at hello.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, we just come up, hang out today, because we're going to talk to you about, well, probably should talk about guitar stuff, because that's what we do.
But generally gear-related stuff.
Yeah.
So anything, basically, who are you? Tell us about yourself.
Sure. Well, I am Sparky, or Mark Poltridge, and I've been up here in Mulaney for about 5 years now, mm-hmm. and originally in Flaxton, but I know all you guys from around Pridgeon Way and so on, and I used to do sound with Alex at Pridgeon Originals for a couple of years, and but basically I play music on the weekends, play guitar, sing and drums and stuff, and I run this recording studio up here in Mulaney. And, so I've been doing this in my studio thing for about 12 years, I suppose, full-time.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah, and I build studios inside shipping containers.
Ah.
Yeah.
And we're going to... there's going to be a video section as well on the on our YouTube channel.
Yep.
Which there'll be links to all that in the description and all that sort of stuff, so...
Because you've got something pretty cool sitting on top of your console at the moment. I have, must say.
Or multiple pretty cool things.
A picture of my wife.
Yeah. Was it your wife? There's stereo space echoes, as in two of them.
As in two, I know.
Roland space echoes, yes.
It's the 201s, aren't they?
I've been very lucky. I've had one 201 for quite a while, but... I had a friend of mine who actually, Mr. Steve Hammercheck, running another studio in Noosa.
Yeah.
Advanced Audio, I think it was. And he lent me his Space Echo, so I got to try them out in stereo, and I've put them on auxiliaries on my desk. I've got an old Yamaha 1516 desk.
Yeah.
It was built in 1980, 81, something like that. And so I've got them on auxiliaries, so I can have them hard left and hard right in the mix, and you know, put whatever I want across through those, and it's changed my world. I love them. Still.
Sorry, Steve, you're not going to get this back.
No.
Obviously, no. I know them a bit from the audio sort of world, as in like often vocal delays with lots of reggae kind of stuff, but also massive in guitar world, like as in like Brian Setzer.
Brian Setzer, yeah.
That's his effects in it.
Absolutely.
That's his pedal order.
Absolutely. And I think it has full tones as well and many other delays and slapbacks.
Radiohead.
And
yeah.
They were one of my all-time favourite in Portishead. They used to run them through the keyboards.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, they're amazing machines. And half the time you got the top off them trying to fix the bodies as well. But I found a guy... in just north of Sydney, called Mr. Echo Fix, who's pretty much
Mr.
all
Echo Fix,
and he fixes space echoes.
With a name like that, like there's only one career.
Only one career, and it's a great career. And so he buys all these pretty good looking space echoes from Japan and converts them, and changes all the capstans and anything needs fixing up, and gets them going again.
Wow!
And
might have to get his contact.
Yeah,
he is amazing.
Mr. Echo Fix. Yeah, that's
his
right.
name's Shane, I think. But yeah.
Oh, Mr. Echo sounds much better.
Yeah,
Echo
absolutely.
Shane.
Yeah, mate.
Speaking of, I don't think I've ever asked you, where did Sparky come from?
I actually don't know, but I think it's Marky Sparky somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah, when I was working many, many years back, when I was about 18, 19, Marky Sparky, and it's just stuck.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I think it was a few years after I've met you that I've ever known that you were Mark. Because no one ever calls you Mark.
They don't know. I think my wife did call me one when I was getting married. I think I'd take you, Mark. I mean, pretty much ever since then, it's always been Sparky. So
everyone went, who? Who's that guy?
Sparky. Sparkles.
Yeah, well, tell us about these containers, because I've seen a few of them, and you build a few over the years, and different formats and stuff. But yeah, how did the idea come about? Yeah.
What is it they say that necessity is the mother of invention?
Hmm.
And I guess, like you, Gabor, we just worked out we're both Virgos, and I like things to be set out and ready to go. And recording in bedrooms was so uninspirational. We all start doing that, but in those boxy sounding gyp rock rooms, it sounds horrible. And so I wanted to create
like
a space. Yeah. So I wanted to create a space that was inspirational to record in, and I recorded in all these studios when I was younger, you know, and they're usually dark spaces that smelled smoky and boys
and other things, other bodily smells, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, and they're horrible. So and it was never very inspirational. So I the farm that my wife and I were living on had an old container out there, and so that was given to me. So I ended up making my first studio in that, where it basically had a tiny little room at the front and a control room inside it. I had that for about 3 or 4 years, and that worked great. And then I sold that on and built another tracking room space. So I had two containers then, and then I sold the original control room tracking space and built a new control room, which we're sitting in at the moment.
Okay.
And since then I've built a number of different ones and sold them on.
Okay.
These two, in fact, have just been sold to an Aboriginal community up in Maningrida, up in... near Darwin up there, and they're leaving in a couple of weeks' time. So once these leave, I'll build get a couple more containers and start building again. But the beauty of these spaces is they're completely portable, and I don't own a house, and so in rental spaces I can shift them if I have to.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. No, that's great. Yeah. Very good idea.
Put them on a truck and off you go.
And it doesn't feel... You don't feel claustrophobic or anything. It doesn't feel like it's small. It doesn't feel any smaller than most other studios I've been in, so...
No, absolutely. And, exactly. And that was... most of the spaces always felt crowded to me, but I'm trying to keep this quite open and natural light and warm tones, and it feels nice. And look, I have troubles getting rid of clients sometimes. They'll hang around for hours
don't
after
go.
I finish recording. It's a nice place to be.
Yeah.
The best man cave in the world, you know?
Yeah.
Man cave.
Nice.
Yeah. So now, gear-wise,
yes,
because I mean that's what we're all about, because we're nerds. What sort of gear inspires you? What kind of when you're looking at gear, when you see something, what kind of stuff do you look at and you go, oh, this is cool, this is what I want, you know? What sort of gears interest you? Being a musician and being a someone who runs a recording studio.
Absolutely. Well, look. Everybody can mix in the box these days. Anybody can have a laptop and a couple of converters or whatever, and
like us,
M-box.
Yeah.
and we all start that.
Yeah, of course.
We all had that, and that's great, you know. And that's quite inspiration. It's your own inspiration that get things down for you. But over the years, I've built up a collection of outboard analog stuff, and recently I bought this old Yamaha 1516 desk, as I was saying before, and had that modded and a few things done to it, because after 35-year-old desk or something like that, and all the capacitors and things start to get really soggy after a while, and they lose their transient detail. So they've all been recapped, and the outboard transformers redone, and so on. And that just sounds great to be able to mix things back through that, you know.
Yeah.
And it seems to add a bit more punch than doing it through the box.
Yeah.
Look, there are many plugins for all these things, and the plugins sound great, but I don't care what anyone says.
Like the real thing,
running it through copper and transformers, things sound great, you know.
Yeah.
The other things that really inspire, I'm really enjoying tape echoes at the moment, of all types. And I've got these tape echoes on the auxiliaries on the desk, permanently hooked up. And I love the space echoes, and I love the full-tone tape echoes. And I've even got some digital delays, you know, the old Lexicon digital delay and an old Roland Wund, which are great as well, you know. But there's no plug-in. I mean, I've got... the Sound Toys Echo ones, what are they called?
Oh, Echo Boy?
Echo Boy. And they're some great things, but they still feel 2D in comparison to actually using tape delays, which break down.
Yeah, it sounded amazing before we had a quick listen to some recording. It sounded really, really nice.
Thank you, yeah. I think it's the way to go to some extent. But, I mean, you know, it doesn't have to break the budget, but if you can have some tape echoes with your mix downs, if you can run things through an outboard... summing thing, I think it's the way to go. Summing voltages rather than summing algorithms in your computer.
Yeah,
I just don't think you can emulate
No.
Look, some programs are really getting close these days, but I still...
It's never quite the same,
Yeah, I guess it's all the little imperfections with things like older gear that gives it a character, and within that character you actually get, like, personality and something you can relate to. It's almost human.
Absolutely. Alex, I didn't think about it, but that's exactly what I'm...
I saw an interview with Rupert Neve, who, obviously, famous for that kind of thing. He doesn't really rate the 1073 as a preamp
because
he's all these little imperfections he's not happy with.
Wow.
But everyone loves it as this
character
preamp, for vocals and drums and guitars and everything.
Absolutely. It has a certain thing, that thick but punchy bottom end and silky top end. They're not perfect, you know, but that's not what we're looking for, you know.
Yeah.
And the other thing I love about outboard gear is that I'm just sick of toppy recordings and toppy mixes, and I'm trying to actually calm things down again and get back to a sound that's warm and inviting and brings you into the mix, not push you away.
You could really notice that when you were turning those Space Echoes on, it was a little bit dark, but it added that warmth and darkness to it. It sounded really nice.
It made
the sound stick out, but not pierce.
And it doesn't get in the way as well. It never sonically gets in the way. It just seems to add a depth to it, you know.
Yeah.
And with having it in stereo like that and having it bouncing off, they're all almost the same delay speed as each other, but they seem to bounce off each other in a way that just adds this dimension that I've never been able to find in plugins.
No.
You know, and I often put two instances of delays left and right, you know, and run through that, but it never does what
they do
to my ears anyway.
They're definitely on my bucket list. That's something.
It's an expensive bucket list.
That's the problem.
The thing. It's like the full tone tape echo. You have to replace the cartridges, you know, and it's like $60 a go every time, and the tapes. And mind you, it's love, you know. It's like any relationship. You put time and effort into it, and you'll get love back, you know.
I was talking to last year sometime. I was talking to a friend of mine, and they were part of a road crew that were touring around with the band, and the guitarist had to have his full-tone tape echo. And they were saying, man, we hate that because you can't really tilt it. It has to be in the right thing, and it broke down every single time on a tour, and this is going all around Australia. But he had to have it because he just wanted it. And
It's amazing. I've been using it when I'm doing live. I do live sound, like Alex does as well.
Yeah.
And I have done a few festivals, and I guess put it across the main vocals, and it just adds this dimension I can emulate slapback echoes and stuff with other effects on board, the digital mixes that we use, you know, the PreSonus and the... Alan Heath and things like that, but far out. It just blows me away.
Yeah, yeah.
And it gets me invited back
a lot to
a lot of other festivals, you know, because it's a great sound, you know.
Yeah.
People...
Oh, what was that? Yeah, that's something.
Yeah.
So how did the transition go from Sparky the drummer and percussionist and performer to Sparky the studio man? How did that all sort of happen?
I had done a lot of recordings with a lot of bands, and I had some experience with fantastic, but majority of them were in project studios that I don't think the people quite knew what they were doing.
Okay.
I guess knew I could do it better. I just didn't know how to at that stage. And so I guess read everything I possibly could, and I guess read, and I'm a bit obsessed by it. And you make a lot of mistakes when you first start out. You know, you get your little... I had a little VS Roland VS-880.
Yeah.
I thought it was changed my world. I loved it at the start.
Yeah.
And you do all this recording, but then it certainly has a sound, and after a while you pass it on and get some other converters with your PC or whatever and try that, and you just get better as you go.
Yeah.
And I just love it and love it and love it, and I love creating with other people. I don't get precious about... I enjoy the experience of sharing with other people, and the sum of its parts. Often most of my time these days is spent with arrangement these days on picking songs and keys and getting the right key for their voice, pre-production, before we even press record, and that just pays off in spades these days, and it just feels great, and that will always translate well, you know, across it. Whereas if I have a note-perfect recording, well-recorded, but no feel and no emotion, then you got nothing.
Yeah.
And so that's the part I enjoy the most, is being involved in helping it create a nice space for them to be in, you know, physically with the studios, but also a nice atmosphere for them to be in and feel comfortable. And also, you know, by finding the right key for the singer-songwriter's voice and, you know, the right speed, the right groove sort of thing that brings that song to life. And that's just rocking my world these days. I love that stuff. More than... I still love playing. You know, I'm still playing in summer regional bands and still doing covers as well, and I really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I could do recording all the time, it would be fantastic.
Okay, you know? Okay. Interesting. Yeah, because I think when I met you, 96-ish, 7-ish.
I saw you in one of your first bands. Was it Subterranean?
Subterranean Emergency Vehicle, back in the olden days.
I saw you at the Namble RSL, and you're in the original front corner in this old white room, this huge ringing white room. And
Horrible-sounding room,
yeah,
yes.
And you're supporting the Tea Party.
Tea Party, yeah. We did a few support gigs in there. That was amazing.
And I saw the Tea Party, I saw, you know, Jeff, and then we came back to see you guys play. And
They were supporting us because we were on after them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. They so were. Jeff Martin, is it, or something? Yeah, no, it was awesome. You guys were bloody fantastic.
Oh, cool,
you know?
Cool.
And that's before I was doing any cover bands, and not that you guys were covers, but you were doing your own thing.
That was all original. I think we did actually a big no-no, which was playing a Tea Party cover at a Tea Party gig.
Which one did you cover?
I think we played Temptation.
Right, yes.
Yeah, I think we actually covered a Tea Party song at a Tea Party gig, but we just thought, who would cover a song, if you're supporting an act, who would cover the song of the act that you're supporting? That's what we thought. We're really smart. Let's do that.
It was great. No.
But no, it was good fun. It was good fun. But yeah, when I first met you, you were playing percussion in Tooth Fairies, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
And there was another band that you were in, I think, with Shannon Carroll, Driftwood, I think it was called, and
to Subfreak.
Subfreak,
that's right. Wow.
And then I don't know. You weren't involved though, but Jesus Christ Superstar. We were the music.
That's right.
And that's sort of that's when everyone was kind of hanging out and everything. I think that's sort of the first memories of that, which was like.
I mean, Alex Barry and Alex Barry
Mike Long and all those guys.
That time, yeah.
It was a long time ago. But yeah, I mean that was back then. That was all performance or gigs or running around. Now looking at all this sort of more. Studio stuff, but from a performance, from a playing kind of sort of thing, what equipment sort of inspires you? What's kind of, because I mean, you play drums, you play guitar. Mm. What is something, if you go into a secondhand shop and you see something, what sort of stuff from a non-recording thing, but from a performing thing?
All the pedals and all the different colours. Just blow me away.
And not just pedals, because we're pedal nerds, but...
Yeah.
What sort of stuff? What do you feel drawn towards? What is something that if you go into a music shop and... Like I said, not looking at recording side of things, like from a musical instrument side of things. What sort of stuff do you find interesting? What do you find yourself drawn towards?
You know, I guess I haven't been doing that much, going into the stores recently and doing that sort of thing. You know, I've just been replacing heads on my drums. I've owned a number of drum kits in my life, but... I ordered a Ludwig USA Maple custom kit. It took 14 months to arrive into Australia, and it arrived 2 weeks. I bought it through Billy Hyde's, and it arrived 2 weeks before the receivers moved in. And I just got it, took it out, and then 2 weeks later I heard that anybody else had anything else on order, lost everything.
Oh,
lost
crap.
Everything, the poor bugs. And I haven't bought any other drum stuff since, and I love my Ludwig USA kit. It's the best kit, the most incredible tone I've ever heard in a kit.
Yeah.
A 24-by-18-inch kick. It's got all the punch, but all the click as well, and that rock kick sound without any of that boxiness you get out of 20-inch kicks and stuff like that, you know. The floor tom's amazing, and I had a bit of retail therapy recently. I bought a Ludwig Supraphonic snare, the John Bonham snare, the most recorded snare in history.
Well, okay,
and that's rocking my world. That's what I love.
And for everyone for people that are not listening from Australia, Billy Hyatt's was basically a big chain here that sort of went under. Yeah. And,
it was the music it was sort of distribution, like, and they're also their own wholesaler as well.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure what happened, but...
They went under.
They went under in a big, big way.
Yeah, and a lot of people lost a fair bit of money, and, yeah.
Once the receivers moved in, everybody had stuff on order, they had no rights to it anymore.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's...
That's, yeah, just for you, for your non-arsies.
Yeah, cool. So, back to the cool stuff like guitars.
Yeah.
I guess because you spend a lot of time in here, how do you approach recording guitars?
Acoustics or electrics?
Both. Let's start with acoustics, because it's alphabetical.
Let's start with A.
Okay. The biggest change that ever happened when it came to recording acoustics was the change in the room, actually having a decent room. Mm-hmm. It makes infinitely bigger than having a great mic or great mic technique or mic technique's a lot to do with it, or preamps or compressor or anything like that, or converters. Having a great room, a great sounding room right from the word go, and finding the part in the room that's the most in phase, because some parts of rooms have like too much bass build up or it's too thin or something like that. And acoustic guitar doesn't quite ring in these spaces, these containers with these Helmholtz resonators and things, which take up the low mid problems we get with rooms and stop their boxiness.
Mm.
It's been much easier to get an acoustic guitar sound. So really, once with a decent room and a great player and a great guitar, next comes mic and the mic technique. And you'll find that if you have the mic too close to the guitar, you get this really bass build-up sort of sound, too far away from it, and it's too thin and too roomy. And you'll find there's a part when you move the mic around where everything just comes into focus. It's mainly the bass you're looking at. The top end will always take care of itself. It's not a problem. You're concentrating on the bass. When you put on have someone play the guitar, and then put on a set of headphones and move the mic around while they're playing and find the bit where the bass comes into focus with the microphone.
Okay.
And look, you can use, a fantastic pencil condenser or a fantastic large diaphragm condenser, or you can use a 57, but you just find that right, it's mic technique.
Right spot in the room.
Right spot on the guitar, and it'll just shine, it'll sound amazing, if you've got a good player and a good source.
Yeah, of course, that's always that's always handy.
Preamps, to some extent, if it's a toppy guitar, use a really slow sounding preamp that's not too bitey. If it's a really dull sounding guitar, then use a really airy preamp, and a fast transients, and it'll open the guitar out a lot.
Nice. Do you ever record DIs from acoustic guitars?
I used to, but I feel like my mic technique's good enough now that I'm just comfortable with just using the one mic. Sometimes I use two mics. I'll use a large diaphragm and a small diaphragm condenser mic, and line those up so the phase is right. But you still get some phase issues. So I've gone back to recording with just one good mic now, and everything just comes into focus.
Yeah, right. Cool. And how about guitar amps?
Guitar amps. Okay, so... I reckon the biggest change for me has been plug in your guitar, stick some distortion pedal on, something that makes a hell of a lot of noise, and gain the living shit out of it, whatever. gain it right up, and get the amp to go lots of noise, and then put your headphones on, gain the preamp up on your desk that you're recording through, and then listen back on the headphones and move the mic around, and you listen, the guitar doesn't play, you just listen to the noise, the white noise. Too close to the speaker, and it gets this too much bass build up. Too far back, and the sound gets too thin. So again, finding this spot where the white noise seems to come into focus, where it's strong without being thin, without being bitey. Bite hits too far away, or you're pointing the wrong spot, too close and it's too woofy. You find the spot where it just feels like it comes into focus, and then gain everything back down again, and the guitars just sing. There's this bell-like tone, with clean guitars, with just a Strat through a Blues Junior or something like that, and there's this bell-like tone where you just playing with your fingers, and it sings. It goes beyond the speakers, and I'm never have to EQ anything in the mix. I don't have to do anything. It's just there right from the word go. And get it right at the source, you know?
Yeah, cool.
Again, a nice sounding guitar as well will make a big difference, and a great player.
The player always, of course,
the fingers, the tone, and so on. I mean, I don't play lead or anything like that, but I get to work with some great lead guitar players and you know, really, a nice guitar. And I've got this Strat here I bought. It's a Japanese one, 86, 87 Strat, a Japanese one. And the tone on that's freaking amazing, you know. And I got that for $1,000 at that guitar place in Sydney, Global Vintage.
Okay.
Global Vintage. And he's got some great stuff. He must go to Japan.
He's got lots of good stuff. Yeah, he's got lots of Japanese stuff.
I'm really impressed. Yeah. And this one's just been beautiful. And I just get so many comments from guitar players coming in.
There's some great stuff from Japan. I've got quite a few Japanese guitars too. They make some really, really good stuff.
Beautiful stuff.
Very underrated, in my opinion.
Very underrated, yeah. And I've owned, you know, newer Fender Strats and that, and just nothing ever did it for me. I sold them off. I just couldn't stand any of them, you know.
That sort of 70s, 80s, late 70s and then 80s period in Japan was one of the best guitars.
The Japanese were doing it better than Fender from about 85, I think it was 84, 85 onwards for about 5-6 years, I think.
Well, that's what the whole lawsuits thing and that's why they ended up buying it in the end, so I guess they made better guitars than the American plant,
Can't beat them, Jonah.
Exactly. Well, if you can't beat and buy him, that's it.
Well done. Yeah,
that's exactly. Basically it.
But it's the room, not so much with electric guitars, I tend to find, you know. Sometimes I mic with a ribbon mic and a 57.
Okay.
Again, just being concentrating on phase, making sure that the two mics are lined up, bang on. Otherwise, mind you, sometimes you can play with phase and get some cool sounds. Phase coherency for me, when you have two mics recording the same source, is everything these days. If you get that right, then everything punches beyond the speakers, beyond out of the mix. If you get the phase not quite right, then it just sucks the life out of your the thing you're trying to record, you know. So I'm often going back to just one mic again and just get the mic technique right, the right mic, right amp, right guitar player, right guitar.
Yeah.
Less always is more.
Yeah.
Less is more. I can't say it enough.
except for when you buy pedals, then more.
Except for pedals, you more need to buy more. Some more is more.
More.
Unless you've got an Ibanez with a Floyd Rose and a something.
Yeah. So do you guys talk about tone suck with pedals then? When you've got the more is more thing, and the more pedals you have, the more tone suck you have.
You do, but that's when switching systems and that come in, which there's a lot of that.
Buffers and stuff.
Buffers, actually, a lot of it. True bypass, to a certain degree. Actually is worse than Buffett.
I didn't know that. Now that I didn't know, you know way more than that.
Well, because with Buffett, it's an impedance thing, and it boosts the signal. So when you have long cable run, if you use all true bypass, if you use all true bypass, it actually rolls the top end off. So your impedance goes.
I didn't know that.
If you have a buffer in there at some stage, I mean, this is where a lot of you have purists that say one thing and other people that say other things, but in my personal experience, a buffer will make it, will change the tone, and not change the tone, but regain your tone instead of losing that top end that you'd lose through long cable run.
Because if you've got a big board, you essentially got like another two guitar cables in there.
Pretty much. I mean, all the patch cables, run through all the patch cables.
There's a lot of cables.
That's a lot of cable length you add. And the more cable length you have, the more of your top end rolls off.
Per foot, you lose a certain...
You lose a certain amount. And a buffer will actually reverse that. So if you put a buffer... Quite often it's a good idea to have a buffer at the start and at the end of your pedal chain. But especially at the end, so when it goes... After you've run through
Particularly if you have big board, like I do.
But that's where switching systems come in too, where you if you don't use a pedal, it doesn't actually run through. It doesn't actually run through the pedal, so you go into the switching system, guitar into switching system, out of the switching system into the amp, and the pedal will only be on when you turn it on. You know what I mean? So that cable length is only there if you turn it on.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, interesting.
Buffers. A lot of people.
I'm going to keep listening to your show. I'm going to learn a lot of stuff.
Did you know you could subscribe on YouTube?
You can just go to YouTube and subscribe to the Super Fun Awesome Happy Time Pedal Show.
How do I do that?
Well, the internet's on computers now.
Yeah.
What you do? You go to YouTube.
Wow.
Yeah, no.
You just type in the address and then, or you go to Facebook and,
Awesome.
But yeah, no, buffers, it's one of those things that a lot of people argue about, because you have the very pure purists that will tell you that you need to have all true bypass and only true bypass, but you do end up retaining your tone much better if you have a buffer. But I mean, not all buffers are buffers. You get better buffers and buffers that are not too good. But.
I do understand. I had the same thing with my old Yamaha desk. All the meters, they weren't buffered back then.
Yeah.
And consequently, when you put them in line, then it's just changing the tone of your signal. So I've had to have all the meters buffered as well.
Yeah.
But I didn't know the pedals. I thought true bypass was a buffered thing.
True bypass is great if you have, say, two pedals.
Yeah.
Like an overdrive and delay or whatever. Yeah. But if you've got 15 or something.
Something stupid like that, like I would do.
Then it
like the ball would do. Absolutely.
If you need a whammy.
Or not just that. If you have a really long cable, if you have an extra long cable and you're on a big stage, and you know if you don't want to use wireless, and you have a very long cable, even if you're going directly into the amp, the really long cable will roll off your top end. It's an impedance thing.
Yeah, impedance exactly. Yeah. And that I truly understand. The impedance mismatch is. I think I'm also thinking about a lot, and it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Again, with the full tone thing, because it's set up for a guitar. You plug your guitar into that and through your other stuff into your amp.
Yeah.
But the way I've got this set up now, I've actually had the output and the impedance change, so I can now run a signal out of my desk through the auxiliary out into that full tone.
Yeah.
And then I've had it changed so the output now matches what comes back into my desk.
Okay.
Rather than going into an amplifier where it's supposed to go
line
first.
Line level.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So you change line level. And the full tone guy will hate that, and when he hears that, because apparently they're fairly they don't want you to touch anything, basically.
Yeah.
But it
works for you. It works for the studio. It's yours.
You can do what you want.
You can do whatever you want.
Exactly. But it works in this situation. You know, it's perfect for. I use it in mixdown rather than tracking with effects. Sure. Look, sometimes I have guitarists who are truly confident in what they're doing. They will track with effects, and it's really cool. And I have tracked with that full tone director, and it's amazing, you know, and you can actually blend the original signal with the with the effector symbol, you know, which is great. But yeah, it's up to you. You know, would you insert it or use it as an effect?
Have you ever used like guitar pedals or other effects as effects rather than a guitar sound? Like
yes, I used to use the DM2. Was it the analog?
Oh yeah,
Roland analog.
Okay,
pedal. I used to use that a lot. I didn't quite understand about impedance and so on at that stage because the signal's coming into it was fairly hot.
Gotcha.
But you can use a passive. God, I'm sure I have it here somewhere, but a passive. Rob Squires from Adelaide, who makes these little units that change the impedance, bring it back down to really high impedance.
Okay.
So and bring the signal down, so then you can run it into these effects and then back out again.
Okay.
For reamping, we were talking before about reamping stuff. Reamping, that's another thing. Again, I'm loving doing this with drums. We were discussing before. Once I've recorded the drums in these rooms, you know, they're fairly dry. I mix the sounds that I want, so the drums are really pumping. I'm really happy, and then I'll take a stereo mic into a big hall or a hall I like the sound of. And I'll set up the PA in one end of the room and the mic in the other end of the room, and I'll play the drums dry through a sub and a top box in a mono thing. I won't do it in stereo.
Yep.
And then record different mics around the room and re-record. So I run the mix signal through the reamping device into the PA, then record that signal that comes out, and then remix that back in into the final mix of the drums, so you get that big rock sound if you're going
through. Yeah, if you want it. Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds great. I mean, lots of people, that seems to be a thing lately, the whole reamping thing, because, I mean, companies are coming out with all these load boxes now as well for guitar amps, so you can run your heads directly into the
power soaps and stuff?
Basically, these sort of things.
DI sort of things directly. And then
you can run it directly into the desk instead of running through a cabinet and all that sort of stuff.
And you have options later on. Because sometimes you might be in a hurry, you might have time to get that perfect guitar tone after. So at least you have the option.
Often happens with bass guitars too, where sometimes sounds great going through guitar amps rather than a bass amp. And I've heard but obviously you have to keep it at low volumes.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter if you're recording. So if you've got that chance to do that kind of thing later on with a reamp box.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And you can experiment. And
record the DI if you have a great DI, and then you get a solid signal to hard drive to start off with, and then reamp if you want to. And then you've got the option of, again, phase coherence, trying to line up. Obviously, you get the best, you flip the phase of the DI to try and match the mic. It's never perfect, but you're trying to get the thing that the way to do it, I often find, is get it to sound the most out of phase. You get the DI signal and then the mic signal, and flip the DI signal to be almost completely out of phase with the mic signal. So you get this really super, super thin sound in the bass, and then the thinnest you can possibly get, then flip the phase back again, and you should have the most in phase sound. Combination of the mic off the speaker of the amp and the DI.
Okay, that's interesting.
Mm.
I was just going to say with bass going through guitar amps, I think a lot of surf bands back in the days used to record the basses through twin reverbs and stuff.
Oh, right.
For a certain sound, okay. I think. So back in the days, they used to do. Yeah. I think a lot of like Ventures and those bands back in the days, they used to record through guitars and a bass through twin reverb amps just to get a certain sound.
I've tried it at home just as a practice if there's only a guitar amp set up in the lounge room. And it's often really great tones, but you can't push it very loud.
No.
To gig level.
So no, but it's in a recording scenario, that's what
perfect.
I mean. Yeah.
And there's no way you need big anything in a studio.
No, well, that's it. That's
it worked for Frank Zappa to record through those little pig nose amps, and you get some amazing sounds out of that. It doesn't have to be big at all in a studio situation.
And speaking of that, we just saw in the other room, you've got your amps basically in sort of these shelves, boxes.
Soffit-mounted speakers,
Soffit-mounted speakers.
Yeah, we do. So I'm finding, rather than just having them on shelves and things like that, I actually have them soffit mounted into a bass trap. So they're both open back amps. It's a Fender Blues Junior and
Marshall combo
DSL
thing.
Or something like that.
Yeah, that's all valve thing. Look, they sound great. They have you can't take them anywhere because as soon as you take them out, they stop working. But when they go, they sound great. They don't travel very well. But So soften many. I'm finding that actually it seems to have more cabinet thump, those things now. When I record those, it seems to really push out the front and get, especially with the metal-y type stuff or whatever, you're chugging away, it seems
more
to have
focused.
A bit more focus and a bit more thump to it. I'm really happy with that recently. I'm still trying different methods every time, but I think it's soffit mounting the speakers are good as long as they've got air to get in them as well. That's it.
They need that. Yeah.
Now, speaking of twin reverbs, I just got to try out one of the new JC40s, the Roland JC40 twin reverb jazz chorus.
The reshoe kind of ones.
The jazz chorus.
Okay.
Because the one, old 120 was great sounding. Yeah. All the African bands used to use them in the 80s and stuff. And they're just awesome,
And
a really nice chorus. Worst distortion ever in the world.
Yeah, well.
But did clean like a boss, but this new JC40s, I guess got to try one at Samba Music. Ziggy, here's a plug for you, mate. It's Samba Music here in Mulaney. I got to try one, I guess, recently.
Just in Mulaney, you say?
Yeah, in Mulaney. Ah. Yes.
That's convenient.
Ziggy graciously let me try it out, and it sounds fantastic. It's the twin 10s, if I got that right, I'm pretty sure, rather than
10s,
the 12s.
Really, cool.
And a 40-watt
like
amp,
tens, yeah.
And it's lovely. It's really nice. Mm. And you got that stereo sound with the two.
Mm.
Oh, my God. Oh, God, that's my... next amp I'm going to get, I reckon. Oh, okay. So I've got that super clean, I want to get the super clean Jazz Chorus, and then I've got my Blues Junior, which I guess love. It's just great clean, but with mm-hmm. a bit of grit. And my Marshall, which just seems to be covering a number of things, you know. Yeah. But most of the time I'm doing clean sounds more than metal-y type stuff here, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The majority of stuff I get here is the acoustic folk rock type acts.
Yeah, yeah.
We have had that discussion before about different types of clean sounds, like there's Fender clean and Vox clean and Marshall clean, like all clean, but I'm doing inverted commas, by the way.
For those without television.
Air commas.
You can't see my punctuation.
I'm a big fan of, I understand the cleans you're talking about. My friend Rory O'Donnell has a Vox AC30. 15. 15, sorry. When he first got it, I didn't like it at all. But his speaker has seemed to have settled in beautifully, and it's got this tone now. It just doesn't bite anymore, and it's a lovely clean with a slight breakup. Very different to the American
Fender type
breakup. Fender does that slightly overdriven thing quite nice. It doesn't. I don't believe it does distortion. It doesn't do a distortion. But it does that slightly overdriven thing just beautifully, and the Vox does too. And especially, I love the vibrato thing with the amp's lovely as well.
Have you ever tried blending? Because a lot of people tend
to
amps. So a lot of people, for example, if you use a Fender clean and a Vox clean, and actually have them both going at the same time
and recording the same room,
and recording at the same time and blending them together.
I have, yes. I do have a hard left and right or something like that. And I have. It doesn't always work. In some situations, it does. I seem to be playing recording less than I used to. I used to track endless guitars because I could. I used to read about Smashing Pumpkins and how many billions of guitars they record. And I loved. I loved that album. Was it Siamese
Dreams?
And I just put on headphones at night time and shut my eyes, and I love the sound. It just blew me away, you know. But that's cool. It's cool stuff. But I'm just getting back to less and less now, and just creating space with delays and stuff like that. And I think it opens the mix out more. I'm sick of these mixes recently. You know, the last 20 years, it's just this in your face, almost feels two dimensional. You know, the mixes that we used to love. You know, probably the pinnacle of recording was up in the 80s, and these mixes would invite you right in. You could feel the space, you could be in the space, and invite you in and wouldn't push you away.
And dynamic too, like...
Dynamic punch.
Like, things get loud in mixes, then they get soft again. It's not like...
All the same,
smashed against the ceiling.
Face, one thing, and that's what I'm enjoying getting back to, more open mixes these days, and less is always more, you know, creating more space. And
cool. Nice.
Cool. Well, we've covered a lot of ground. Well, if people want to find out more about you and your recording studio, is there like a website or something where they could go to?
Sure. So my recording studio is Spark One Studios. That's SPARK, number one studios, .com. And I also build shipping container studios and sell them around Australia, and that's containerstudios.com.
Okay.
And those two things,
Cool.
Thank you for having me, guys. It's fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you for having us.
The inaugural...
You're a guinea pig, so hopefully... thank you for being the guinea pig.
I'll be a little pig in it.
Lovely.
There was also going to be another section we're about to do, which will be a video.
The video part of it, yeah. So you can go to our YouTube channel. All the links will be in the description below, where we'll look at all the look at the Roland Space Echoes. We'll look at the Full Tone Echo. We'll just show the studio a little bit, and and then go from there.
Yeah. So check out the video if you haven't seen that already, and. Thanks for hanging out.
Yeah. Thanks, Sparky.
Pleasure, guys. Thank you very, very much.
All right.